I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show. I'm Dr. Carl O'Helvey, your host. My first guest today is Dr. Karen Sherman, a licensed psychologist in New York who has been in private practice for 25 years. Her focus is on relationships, marriage, and helping people achieve their greatest potential. Karen is the author of Mindfulness and the Art of Choice, Transform Your Life, which enables people to let go of conditioned responses and empowers them to make their own choices. She is also the co-author of Marriage Magic, Find It, Keep It, and Make It Last, and a contributor to 4 Mental Health Questions Answered, The Complete Marriage Counselor's Power of Persistence, Recovering the Self, Volume 2, Number 3, and 103 Great Ways to Improve Your Life, Volume 2. She writes for thirdage.com and hitchedmag.com and is a relationship expert on selfgrowth.com. Karen also conducts workshops, teleseminars, and speaking engagements. She is frequent guest on national radio, and her expert opinion has appeared in numerous publications. Additionally, she was a former relationship expert on the Bo Griffin Morning Show and a marriage expert on clubmom.com. Her memberships include American Psychological Association, American Counseling Association, and Nassau County Psychological Association. She is certified as a National Board Certified Counselor and a National Family Life Educator and belongs to the National Registry for Marriage-Friendly Therapists. She serves in the Undergraduate Psychology Department at CW Post University. Her website, www.yourempoweredrelationship.com, offers free newsletters and programs. I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show, Karen, and I look forward to hearing about visualization, mindfulness, and choice. Now, in your book, you say that people live on autopilot. Mm-hmm. What does that mean, and why does that happen?
Well, you know, Carl, we learn patterns when we're children, and we keep doing them. So let me tell you about an interesting client that I had that I think really represents this.
Mm-hmm.
She came in and she was telling me about the fact that what she found was so many times she would meet guys and, you know, she'd be interested in them and they would seem interested in her, and yet none of them would commit to her.
Mm-hmm.
She couldn't understand it because she thought she was a really good girlfriend. And in fact, she was very attractive, very bright, a professional. And, you know, really, it seemed like there was no reason that they wouldn't commit to her.
Mm-hmm.
And as we explored her background, it turned out that her mom, when she was little, when my client was little, her mom was unfortunately ill.
Mm-hmm.
And my client was put into the role of being a caretaker. Certainly not done intentionally, not done with any, you know, reason to put my client into a bad role, just what the circumstances were.
Mm-hmm.
And so she did, and that pattern got wired into her brain. And so she continued that pattern right into her adulthood and didn't even realize she was doing that. And so what happened in her relationships was that she was exactly what she said, a really good girlfriend, too good of a girlfriend.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so there was no intrigue. There was no, you know, mystery, shall we say, to
mm-hmm.
her.
Mm-hmm.
And so none of the guys really wanted to commit to her.
Oh.
Now, once she recognized that pattern, because that's what it takes to make a difference, she was able to change it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that's why it happens, and it happens to all of us, and we just continue to live in this autopilot way, not really being aware of what we're doing and following these patterns from our childhood.
Mm-hmm. Karen, are there other reasons why this old behaviors can be problematic?
Oh, absolutely. Because when we're doing things, out of our old patterns, very often we end up reacting to things in the present where it's not really because of things that are happening in the present. So, mm-hmm. again, story from the people I work with. I was working with a couple, and this is very typical of couples. The woman was complaining that she never really felt special in the relationship. She didn't really feel that her husband was making her important enough. And she was reacting many, many times and getting very upset about, you know, that he just was not giving her attention.
Mm-hmm.
And he really was trying very hard to learn how to be a much more responsive, caring husband. And without going into a huge amount of details, they came in one night and he gave a story where, as he's telling me this story, I'm sitting there privately thinking to myself, wow, this is great. This guy really is, you know, trying to be responsive, really learning how to pay attention to her and, you know, let her know that she's important to
mm-hmm.
him.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, with all the things that he was doing, she ended up really blasting him and really being very, very reactive and you know, giving him a very hard time about something that was so insignificant. And it turns out that as we really walk through it much more carefully, it was not really about him. It turned out that she was reacting to feelings that she still had that were left over from her childhood,
mm-hmm.
about feeling that her mom was not really giving her enough attention.
Mm-hmm.
So again, she was not aware, and yet it was really affecting their relationship. So there are lots of times where we are bringing into our present day situations things from our past, and it's really impacting in a very negative way the things that are going on in our, you know, present day
mm-hmm.
situations, whether
mm-hmm.
it's our relationships, it's our jobs, it's over responding to the way we handle, you know, our friendships or, you know, any number of situations. And again, it's not really because of what's going on in the present day situation.
Mm-hmm. And once you point out these things to your clients, are they hesitant to change? Or because I know how difficult change can be in life.
Oh, boy, have you hit it on the nail, Carl. Change is really, really hard. It's risky. You know, I just gave a workshop last night, and it was exactly about how difficult it is to make change.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know what it's going to be like. You know, part of it is exciting because you think, oh, wow, you know, I can, you know, change my image, or I can have a new relationship, or, you know, I can learn a new
mm-hmm.
behavior. And then there's the dreaded part, like, you know, what's it going to be like? And, you know, what am I going to have to do? And it's going to take you out of your comfort zone.
Right.
So absolutely. But change does not have to take place in big steps. It can be done little by little. And as you go through a certain process that I, you know, suggest for making changes that are really wired into your brain, it really is a very gentle one where you come to know yourself and allow yourself to be in touch with the parts of yourself that for many of us we have really sort of turned away from,
mm-hmm.
but
mm-hmm.
by being willing to embrace them and to get to know them and work with them, it really opens up all sorts of possibilities.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. In your book, Karen, you talk a lot about the tools of visualization and
mm-hmm.
free association writing.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us some about these two techniques?
Yes, thank you so much for asking. You know, a moment ago, I was talking about being able to be in touch with parts of yourself that haven't had a chance to be expressed. So let's go back to that client who was the woman in the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
What I realized as a therapist, in part because, quite frankly, I went through this experience myself.
Mm-hmm.
And what I found was that when you go to traditional talk therapy, you gain insight. You gain an awareness of where the problems come from.
Mm-hmm.
But then you go back out in the real world, and you still get triggered. You still react to things. So through the assistance of a very gifted therapist, I learned a lot of the tools that I speak about in my book. And a lot of them are based in the feelings of the body.
Mm-hmm.
So what I did with this client was when the husband told me about the particular incident, I then turned to her and I said, okay, now you tell me the story from your side. What was going on for you? And when she told it to me, I asked her to tell me what was going on in her body. What did she feel? Where in her body did she feel it? Because your body is your barometer.
Mm-hmm.
It lets you know what you're feeling. Now, a lot of people have difficulty focusing in on their bodies, but there's a way to teach people how to do that as well.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so once you get it in your body, then what happens is that I will ask people to rate it for me on a scale of 1 to 10. And 10 being the worst.
Mm-hmm.
And when they can tell me it's about a 7, I know that the feelings are very activated.
Mm-hmm.
And I will then say, okay, now float back that feeling. Tell me what that feeling brings you to. What memory does it bring you to? And you know, Carl, it's amazing
mm-hmm.
how easily people can actually do that.
Mm-hmm.
And so once they get back to the original memory, because that's what really is getting expressed in the, you know, situation that's gotten triggered,
mm-hmm.
I then ask them to visualize that original memory. Now, it doesn't have to be a specific memory.
Mm-hmm.
It can just be a sense
mm-hmm.
of the original hurt. And what happened was this woman went back to a scene where she and her mom were finally getting a chance to spend the day together shopping.
Mm-hmm.
And when they were in the dressing room, her mom was looking at everybody else but not her.
Mm.
So here she really felt the absence of her mom, and they were finally getting to spend some time together. But even when they were spending time together, her mom was really not attending to her.
Mm-hmm.
So in the visualization, because the brain cannot tell the difference between reality and a visual imagery, visualization, I have the age at whatever age the memory goes back to, I call that the small person,
mm-hmm.
get to express whatever was not expressed in the original hurt or
mm-hmm.
wound. Because you see, these feelings that we have in our body, that's the unexpressed stress or emotions or energy, shall we say,
mm-hmm.
that we're still holding in our bodies. And while it gets expressed in whatever way feels comfortable for the person also visualizes themselves as an adult being the unconditional loving parent. Some people call this reparenting.
Mm-hmm.
And the adult part of your personality just listens unconditionally in a loving way, accepting it and saying, I understand, validating it. Now, we're simplifying it, of course, for
mm-hmm.
the purpose of our talk
mm-hmm.
today.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea is that the energy that got stored up gets a chance to be expressed. Now, again, it has to be in this activated state.
Mm-hmm.
Because if it's not activated, then it's not really any different than talk therapy.
Right.
And the other main piece is that at the end of this visualization, I will make the suggestion that the small self, the little one,
mm-hmm.
can end the visualization in whatever way, even if it's not historically correct, will make them feel good.
Mm-hmm.
What that's doing, Carl, is it is making a new brain connection.
Mm-hmm.
Because in the past, we'll go back again to this client as a concrete example, the client has the memory of when I was in the dressing room, mommy wasn't paying attention to me.
Right.
But let's say in her visualization, mommy now turns to her and says, oh, I'm so sorry, sweetie. I just looked away for a moment. You look beautiful. I love the way you look. Let's go shopping again tomorrow. Whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
She's now making a new brain connection.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I want everybody to understand that this is not a one-shot fix.
Right,
this is
right.
a process.
Right, right.
So this may have to be done several times.
Mm-hmm.
But I will also say that when I do this, clients, whether they be with me personally or in my workshops, report to me that the amount of negativity mm-hmm. or energy mm-hmm. that they have been experiencing diminishes tremendously.
That's wonderful.
I had a client, if I may, not mm-hmm. a client, a participant at a workshop, at the end come up and say to me that when she was a little girl, her cousin inappropriately touched her.
Mm-hmm.
And she must have been in her 70s. She had never told anybody. And she was holding this energy all these years. And through this one visualization exercise that I did with her,
mm-hmm.
she was able to let most of it go.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Now, that's pretty amazing.
Right, it is. Now, Karen, this has just been a sample for the audience of the great material in your book. And can you tell us, and your services, and can you tell us then about the book and your services and how the listeners can reach you and locate
yes,
your book?
Thank you. The book is called Mindfulness and the Art of Choice, Transform Your Life. It's available on my website, which is yourempoweredrelationship.com, yourempoweredrelationship.com. It's, of course, available at any of the online bookstores.
Mm-hmm.
It is through that site that they can contact me as well. There's a free newsletter that's available. And I've also opened up a membership site, which is yourempoweredrelationship.info. And for now, it is by invitation. You may just come and join it and get mm-hmm. lots and lots of information
mm-hmm.
and also the ability for me to respond to you if you contact me, you know,
mm-hmm.
where there's a chat room, so to speak, where I can,
mm-hmm.
you know, respond to your comments.
Right.
So I invite everybody to come and, you know, respond to the material, and I'll get back in touch with you.
Now, Karen, your office is in New York?
Yes, it is. So I, you know, take people on, you know, obviously in person,
mm-hmm.
but I also would do phone work and Skype work. Although at
Great.
This point,
mm-hmm.
what I'm looking to do is workshops,
mm-hmm.
and anybody who'd like to invite me to come do workshops,
mm-hmm.
all my work is customized.
Mm-hmm.
So just, again, contact me through the website, and I will be glad to do a customized workshop, whether it be in this area or, you know, some variation of teaching people how to make change in their life. And I want everybody to know that change is absolutely possible.
Right. Well, thank you very much, Karen. This is very interesting. I love the process. I've used visualization, but I've always used it at a point in my own life. And I can see where your process would be so helpful for people that aren't aware of where they are. I've used it like when I had lung cancer. But I can see where your process takes people back and looks at their behavior earlier and then tries to use the visualization to make changes in their feelings about that behavior. So that's really great.
And I thank you so much, Carl. It's so important for me to let people know that they have the possibility of change. So
right.
I thank you so much
right.
for this opportunity.
And thank you, Karen.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye. And now for a word about the new spring issue of A Distinctive Style magazine at www.adistinctivestyle.com. As usual, this issue is a gourmet delight of wonderful stories, music, and movies, so it is difficult to select a few to mention. I start with interviews with two well-known stars, Linda Gray of Dallas fame, who talks about what moves her and what keeps her moving, and the role of gratitude in her life. Then Anne Margaret talks about her life and love, her 45-year marriage, and her abiding faith in God, and how this has been a part of her life and career. Both are inspiring stories. It was great to see Jay-Z Knight in my interview with her. Jay-Z is the channel of Ramtha and is considered by many to be one of the most charismatic spiritual leaders of the modern age. She also made an appearance in another video on this issue. The interesting story of Jonas Elrod, who woke up one day and could see angels, demons, auras, and ghosts, and what this means for him. As a 38-year lung cancer survivor who used controversial natural products when given 6 months to live, I was immediately drawn to the article on a miracle cure for cancer, in which the author discusses the controversy around the natural product guanabanas and the successful experiences from clinical and research studies. Another area of interest as I get older is living a healthy life, and the article on secrets of a long life from the 94-year-old who keeps busy with poker, bridge, and competing in bowling is an inspiration to me and to all. Last, not to be missed, is a violin performance of Estrellita by Charlie Siem and the song L.A. City sung by Connie Lim. You won't want to miss these and other stories, music, and videos in this issue of A Distinctive Style magazine at www.adistinctivestyle.com. My second guest, Damien Vaughn, is a widely recognized expert in the fields of peak performance, psychological well-being, and personal development. Combining his background as a former NFL athlete with extensive research on the mental aspects of performance, Damien's work has helped countless individuals increase their intellectual sharpness, eliminate stress, and improve their career performance. Featured on the web, in print, and on the air, his media placements include the New York Times, the Boston Globe, CIO Insights, ESPN, Examiner.com, TheRugged.com, and The Holistic Success Show. As a former NFL player for the Cincinnati Bengals and Tampa Bay Buccaneers, Vaughn has honed his passions for athletics, business, and life in general through the study of the human psyche over the last 15 years. At an early age, he began to experience what he called bliss consciousness, and the feeling of being in the zone. His quest for expanded awareness became an essential part of his journey when he discovered his undeniable passion for sports. A walk-on to the Miami University of Ohio football team and the first person to be drafted into the NFL in 10 years from his alma mater, during his career in the NFL, Vaughn endured extreme psychological and physical challenges, which he was able to transcend. He became fascinated with the experience of being in the zone and recorded details of each zone experience. By coupling his personal notes with Western psychology and Eastern contemplative literature, he began to develop a deeper understanding of this state. Despite the debilitating injury that ended his career in the NFL, nothing could stand between Vaughn and success. After leaving his football career, Vaughn co-founded a countertop manufacturing company that quickly grew to a multi-million dollar business. Next, he founded Terramar Stone, an importer, wholesaler, and distributor of rare and exotic stone for commercial application, raising millions of dollars in private equity financing for his company. He soon achieved seven-figure numbers in gross revenues. In addition to extensive training in interpersonal neurobiology from the Mindset Institute at UCLA, Vaughn attended the Center of Consciousness Studies at the University of Arizona and also studied at the Chopra Center under the tutelage of Dr. Deepak Chopra and Dr. David Simon for over 4 years, becoming a certified teacher of primordial sound meditation. Vaughn has further been admitted into the prestigious PhD program in positive developmental psychology, neuroscience, and flow theory at Claremont Graduate University, where he will be mentored by Dr. Mahaly Csikszentmihalyi, architect of flow theory and father of positive psychology, beginning in the fall of 2011. He will continue and extend his research in flow theory and publish work in both academic and popular press. The creation of the Vaughn Center is the realization of Vaughn's dream and a sign of his commitment to the development of the athlete's mind and body. Offering workshops and presentations, his coaching is meant to guide individuals toward realizing their deepest and fullest potential. Possessing dual citizenship in Brazil and the United States, Vaughn is multilingual. Consequently, he organized and implemented the first ever international promotional event for the NFL, coinciding with ESPN's Latin X Games in Brazil. I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show, Damien, and I look forward to hearing about a life worth living and the role of meditation. Now, first, what does the field of positive psychology say about happiness?
It's interesting. Even within the field of positive psychology, it's a construct that is one of that causes quite a lot of debate and even some conflict in that debate. So it's hard to really say for sure.
Mm-hmm.
However, in the field, there's been quite a lot of work to develop ways to measure happiness, and that is usually looked at in terms of life satisfaction, the general overall sense of satisfaction with life.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting that the field of positive psychology often is really misunderstood, and a large function of that is because it's so young
mm-hmm.
and just emerging. But in the beginning, you know, it was thought of as really a happyology, I guess, if you could say,
mm-hmm.
and the study of happiness, and it really isn't. And of course, that's part of it, a positive experience a human being will have, but there's much more that goes into this. There's much more complexity
mm-hmm.
in this field, and though we tend to talk even within the field of positive psychology, it's happiness having a particular path dependent upon what you value most
mm-hmm.
in life, but it certainly is really a path with no destination. I think that this is where quite a lot of the wisdom of the East, and at least what is known for here in our culture, is that it's in the here and now, and our ability to become really present with what we do and who we're doing it with. And
mm-hmm.
I would say that happiness certainly really isn't a destination to arrive and seek. It's one of being present.
Right. Mm-hmm. Then how, Damien, do we become more engaged in our lives?
This is really one of the strong and overarching areas of my research
mm-hmm.
and a really important area of study in the field of positive psychology. And becoming engaged in what we do is obviously important as a function of obviously being one with your task and
mm-hmm.
allowing yourself to immerse in the activity. But there's a sense of joy, enjoyment in what you're doing, and there's meaning
mm-hmm.
also in what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Those are all very salient, very clear to you. And what's interesting, however, is that when you look at the statistics, you know, it's 20% or less of workers in America are engaged in what they do. That
mm-hmm.
means that you know, you're both productive and happy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a really sad thing. So we're saying that 80% of our workforce is not engaged. And what's interesting is that of that 80%, more than half are actively disengaged, which means that not only are they, you know, unhappy and unproductive, but they're affecting others as
mm-hmm.
well, and almost intentionally or in a proactive way, actively interrupting the workflow or we'll say engagement of others. And that's a really serious problem.
Mm-hmm.
Not just on the when you look at the, you know, the corporate model of success, but I mean, there's a lot of individuals that are unhappy, and our culture is one of a lot of work and productivity, and we spend a lot of hours at work. So a large, if you want to say, mission of this field of science and positive psychology is to really allow to pull out how we can understand what allows human beings to really flourish
mm-hmm.
in what they're doing, become engaged in what they're doing, so that these work hours and work years that we invest in our life are, they contribute to our development and not create stagnation.
Mm-hmm. I suspect that an aspect of being engaged, or at least a part of being engaged, is that you lose track of time. Because
yeah.
I find that I get so involved in what I'm doing, and I love what I'm doing, and it seems like an hour's gone by, and it's several hours. And I've talked with other people that enjoy what they're doing and are very into what they're doing, and they feel the same thing, that the time just flies by, and you wonder, where is it gone?
Yeah, that's wonderful. That is precisely what a high level of engagement would be certainly a strong characteristic of it. And this is where a state of flow comes into,
mm-hmm.
I think, the conversation, because being in a state of flow is really a very high level of engagement. It's an optimal psychological state where you are just totally immersed in what you're doing. And as you said, there's a transformation of time
mm-hmm.
where, you know, hours could pass and it feels like an instant. Or an instant could literally feel like an eternity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and
mm-hmm.
this interesting paradox of our experience of time. And so that is one of the most fascinating things. Of course, we also get a glimpse of something greater than what we call ourselves
mm-hmm.
in those experiences too. I mean, when there's no time, there's also no space, and we get the sense of spaciousness or boundlessness, or
mm-hmm.
just breaking the boundaries of what we thought we were. So It's a really interesting state to be in, and certainly a large function of what I do in my research and then also with the Vaughn Center is to help others cultivate that,
mm-hmm.
and not only in whatever they invest most of their time in, but also in other domains and of their life and in other pursuits
mm-hmm.
and interests that they have. So
mm-hmm.
it is the pinnacle of human experience, and
mm-hmm.
it's quite amazing.
And then, Damien, how do we get into the flow?
That is the question that no one can really give a generalizable answer to. But I will say this. There's so many ways to look at this. And when you look at the basic theory of how this comes to play, it's simple in the sense that whatever situation or interaction you're stepping into, there's a certain level of perceived skill that you have.
Mm-hmm.
And assuming that you feel that your skills are matched up to the challenges or demands of the situation, then you have the potential for flow. Now, there's a lot of, you know, moderating variables that come into play, and it's dependent upon the situation and the person.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the easiest way to explain this is how do we get into a state of flow is what are the things that you do that you, like you said, mm-hmm. that you just lose track of time. And however you might see them as meaningful or meaningless, you know,
mm-hmm.
in relative standards as far as, like, you know, what contribution it makes to other people or to the world.
Right,
I mean,
right.
You know, for example, it could be, I don't know, it could be cleaning.
Mm-hmm.
It could be folding laundry. It could be taking a walk, gardening. It could be listening to music. Or, of course, it could be playing music or playing sports. And then more complex intellectual activity, you know, in science and writing and strategic thinking and conversation and social circumstances. So it's really a function of feeling a sense of joy in what you're doing,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
immersed into it. Now, this is something that, you know, allowing yourself to become immersed into it sounds simple enough, but this is really the hardest thing
mm-hmm.
to do, because our brains are hardwired to be very keenly perceptive of threats and the like, and then we use technology in such a way today that it seems like we're never really present in anything we do. We're always kind of half attentive and half invested in everything.
Mm-hmm.
So year after year of doing that, it becomes harder and harder to get into a real state of flow. So if you look at, well, what are the things that I do in the day that I could just lose track of time,
mm-hmm.
Then that's really a good starting question.
Mm-hmm.
Find what are those domains, what are those activities that really move me. But then in the work context, you know, oftentimes we're doing work that we don't feel like fit certain strengths or interests that we have.
As far as immersion in what you're doing, does a lot of this have to do with attitude and whether you're positive or negative? Because I think that if you're negative about work and what you do and all this stuff, then you can't get into it. But if you're positive and your attitude is right, because there's certain exercises that you can do to become very positive in life, in addition to the meditation that we're going to talk about. But I'm wondering if your attitude toward life and everything else doesn't make a difference as to whether or not you can get immersed into your activities.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we are either in an upward spiral of development, or we're in a downward spiral. There isn't really a way to be the same over and over.
Mm-hmm.
And having a positive disposition, you know, learning to cultivate more optimism in your life, becoming grateful, and this is a really
simple
practice.
Right.
But the practice of gratitude, it's amazing. And there's so much now going into research of that specifically, the habit of practicing gratitude and what role that plays in increasing our ability to be positive and optimistic and have this positive disposition toward higher states of engagement and flow, and then as a result, the consequence of that, we're more productive.
Mm-hmm.
And as a consequence of that, it's this is how this positive upward spiral really takes place, is that it feeds itself
mm-hmm.
in this cyclical developmental process.
Mm-hmm.
But then it works in the other way, on the negative side as well. And it's just patterns of habituation, and certainly immersion can take place on the negative too. You get immersed in some level of negativity, sometimes more intensely than others. But again, it's another habituation or conditioning pattern.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we have a choice. And you know, you mentioned meditation, and one of the greatest thing about meditation is really the ability to capture the capacity to make a choice.
Mm-hmm.
And that comes from being aware. And you can't really make a conscious choice if you're not aware of the patterns that you're perpetuating, right?
Right.
And so what meditation allows us to do is have this witnessing quality in whatever we're doing, and the ability to really, from a sort of executive level, make these choices
mm-hmm.
and decide quickly and oftentimes spontaneously, are these choices that allow me to become more nourished and nourish others? Are these choices that allow me to grow and develop positively or not?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're aware, it's going to be much more common that you'll make choices that are positive. But what happens is then we're just making choices unconsciously, and those will tend to be negative in some way.
Mm-hmm. The gratitude, I think, is so important. And when I had lung cancer in 74, and I was given 6 months to live, and so I used alternative treatments. And when I lived, I was so happy, and it was a dream that sent me for the x-ray in the first place. And I always say that God speaks to me one way is through my dreams. And so I think that faith and gratitude, and then the other thing for me was trying to be of service to others.
Yeah.
And as a nurse, I'd done that most of my life, but it became more important after I survived cancer. And
wow.
I think that a lot of people that go through that type of a situation, they are grateful and they want to help others. You know, people that have never been in a position to help others before, they want to help others. So I look back at my cancer experience as one of the best things that has happened in my life, You know, and again, it's attitude. I could say, woe is me, why did I have this? But, you know, I think that it has given me the opportunity to talk with other people that are faced with a cancer diagnosis and to give them encouragement. And so I think that the gratitude is very important, and the being positive that you brought up also.
It really is.
Mm-hmm.
It is. And it's something as simple as, at the end of each and every day,
mm-hmm.
what are three things, we write these down
mm-hmm.
before going to bed, what are three things for which we are grateful?
Mm-hmm.
And that simple practice has amazing effects.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned meditation, Damien. Would you tell us more about how this helps us deal with distractions and stress?
Okay, well, if we just think of a meditation, and depending on the context, we could use all kinds of different terms and words and ways to express it. But, I mean, if you look at this really simply as a means, a practice of mm-hmm. regulating or controlling your attention. So attention being really our most scarce resource, right? And we know that it's limited. We can only pay attention consciously to so many things at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, even that limited amount of attention that we have, it's misused so often by, you know, thinking too much into the future or just being preoccupied with
mm-hmm.
other things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm here with you, but I'm thinking about mm-hmm. what else I didn't get done on my to-do list and how mm-hmm. I'm going to get it done, or even I'm here with these people and,
mm-hmm.
you know, I've had some negative experiences with them in the past, so...
Mm-hmm.
You know, what else is there to expect from the situation now? So it's just meditation is about making the most of the capacity that we have and to be aware, to be attentive. It's practicing the skill on a daily basis of controlling consciousness. And the more control we have, the more ability we have to direct our life, design it the way that we intend, rather than live out patterns that were given to us, that were instructed by others upon us, or that we just took on without even really being aware.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, look, if you really pay attention and become aware, you know, a lot of us live our lives in that way. Our identities are so much shaped by our families, our culture, our bosses, our teachers, those around us that we allow to really control a lot of things that we do. And it's not to say that it's our way or the highway. It's just that we have that governing faculty within us that can make choices on a regular basis, moment to moment. And
mm-hmm.
and that's, it's hard to do. It's not an easy thing to do. So meditation is really the practice every single morning, every day, of being present. Just And that's a simple way to describe it. How can I become more present? We practice it through meditation so that we're more likely to be present when we're out in dynamic activity, navigating in the world, negotiating in the world. And it is the mind gym. So people go to a fitness club or a gym to work out to make their bodies more flexible, more durable, stronger, faster, and meditation is that, but for the mind. So we use the mind to shape the brain to become stronger, more flexible, more adaptable, more creative, faster. And so it is a really, really important tool for our well-being.
Did meditation help you with your sports?
Oh, yeah, it did. Well, you know, athletes are really stressed out. And by that, I mean particularly professional athletes. There's a lot of stress, a lot of pressure, and, you know, I played in the National Football League, which was, you know, NFL also stands
mm-hmm.
for not for long. So, you know, your job is on the line always, and it's always made pretty clear that that's the case. So how do you manage that level of uncertainty, that level of pressure? And to me, meditation was the practice. That was my gym.
Mm-hmm.
To be able to manage that well and be a leader and be stable.
Mm-hmm. That's great. How do we follow through on our intentions and resolutions that we make every year at the beginning of the year?
Yeah. Well, intentions, if we are clear about these, and what is an intention? You know, this is a good way to define it would be it's an impulse that's pre-verbal in anything that you do. Any choice, any goal that we set for ourselves, it's really asking the question, well, why do we want this?
Mm-hmm.
And that would represent what the answers that come up would be our intentions.
Mm-hmm.
What do we really, really intend out of the situation? And so when we're really clear about what our intentions are, then what I teach and help others to do is learn how to integrate that into their meditation practice. Because, you know, if we're going into the gym now to work out, to become mm-hmm. more engaged, become more present, and practice the experience of that, shaping the circuitry of the brain to become more prone to this, then we also cultivate a very fertile state of mind. And setting our intentions as integrated with the meditation practice is like planting seeds in the most fertile ground that you
mm-hmm.
can have.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a really useful tool because a fundamental aspect of meditation is learning to detach. And this is a really important part of setting intentions, because when they're clear and you know them, you're certain about them,
mm-hmm.
then you can trust that you can let them go, that
right.
you can trust that those outer extrinsic even types of goals can be put to rest.
Mm-hmm.
Only when you have the clarity, because if we really aren't sure, then it's always going to be a distraction. You know, you're always going to be half attentive because you're not even really sure what it is that you want
mm-hmm.
out of this and what are our intentions. So once you've established those clear intentions, you can put them to rest. Then what's left? The here and now.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever is in front of me, the most important thing I could do. But we can only fully engage and give ourselves permission to be that immersed when we've done that work up front and clarified our intentions.
Mm-hmm.
So that allows us to both to differentiate ourselves in a way that makes us, you know, express our unique talents and skills and intentions for life, but then also putting those to rest, we can fully integrate into the moment, into
mm-hmm.
to the task, and that leads to a complex experience, and
mm-hmm.
that complex experience is flow.
Mm-hmm. Damien, then, would you tell us about the Vaughan Center and the manuscripts that you have that are about ready to go, and how the listeners can reach you and the services you have?
Yeah, so the Vaughan Center is the website. The easiest way to just connect and learn about what we're up to is VaughanCenter.com, and that's V as in Victor, A-U-G-H-N, Center, all one word, VaughanCenter.com.
Mm-hmm.
And there you'll find information on about meditation and about our various programs and what we're up to, what events are taking place. And the other website is DamianVaughan.com, and that's my full name, D-A-M-I-A-N, Vaughan, V-A-U-G-H-N.com. And there you'll find a little bit more about performance-related topics and organizational leadership types of topics.
Mm-hmm.
Those are certainly the best ways to connect with us to see what's coming new, what are the new events, what are the retreats, because what we're doing are various types of retreats
mm-hmm.
and events, workshops, lectures, and seminars. But then we're also bringing out some new types of experiences to interact online, so web type
mm-hmm.
of events. And there you can also find our Meditation Calm Quest album, which is an album based on a class that I started teaching about 5 years ago.
Is that a CD or a DVD?
Yeah, it's a CD found on iTunes,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and it's Meditation Calm Quest, and it's a combination of various lectures on different principles about meditation
mm-hmm.
and guided meditations as well.
Mm-hmm. Great. Mm-hmm.
Really useful tool. And the manuscripts at the moment, there are two. One is about 95% complete,
mm-hmm.
and it is really for the sports health enthusiast and athletes of all levels and sports enthusiasts of all levels and health enthusiasts of all levels. It's learning how to playing from the soul. So
mm-hmm.
it's getting a glimpse through dynamic activity, getting a glimpse of the soul. We can look at it this way. The book is about meditation in action. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we can expand our sense of self in a seated position, practicing in silence, and we can also experience that in really dynamic activity. And in the case of some athletes, it could be violent activity.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a guide and really amazing journey through this book on how do we cultivate that.
Mm-hmm.
I do it really illustrating a bunch of different stories from a lot of different professional athletes and coaches.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I say it's kind of sports and health fitness related, because if you're into sports, you'll really like this book.
Mm-hmm.
It's
mm-hmm.
an interesting merger of sport and meditative aspects.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, playing from the soul.
Yeah. Great.
And the second book is really outlining principles to develop, and it's essentially an outline of principle 7 of them, to live a state of flow.
Mm-hmm.
And really understanding the difference between that human development occurs in one or two ways, either through desperation or inspiration.
Mm-hmm.
And the most common way that human beings develop is through desperation, so through crisis, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's almost, in a lot of cases, it's as if we wait for a crisis to occur to give ourselves permission
mm-hmm.
to do something bigger. And so, you know, we've been fixed in our ways, and suddenly things just fall apart. And now we face up to that, and, you know, we build
mm-hmm.
the resilience, the ability to develop as human beings and get a little bit bigger, a little broader.
Mm-hmm.
So the book is really elucidating the fact that we have a choice,
mm-hmm.
in the sense that certainly we can't choose whether or not we have some trauma in our life physically or psychologically if events occur, but we don't have to wait for some crisis or desperation to allow ourselves to develop.
Mm-hmm.
So how do we develop as human beings? Through inspiration. And that, again, is through the dynamics and mechanisms of finding flow in your life and
mm-hmm.
in every domain of life.
Mm-hmm.
And experience after experience, it kind of causes ignition. You know, it's like igniting you into more growth.
Mm-hmm.
And so that book is really a prescriptive outline of how do we do it? How do we engage in life in this way
mm-hmm.
so that we are growing and developing as human beings, not just in one domain,
mm-hmm.
for example, not just in our careers.
Mm-hmm.
But oftentimes it's like, you know, yeah, I'm doing better in my career now, but I don't have a relationship with my spouse, or
right.
I don't see my kids,
mm-hmm.
and I don't have work-life balance, or and this is something we all struggle with. So the book is written to help us through that path and through that whole process.
Mm-hmm. Now, will these be available through your website?
Okay, yeah, they will both be available through the website, but it depends. They're still in
mm-hmm.
manuscript form, and I'm working with publishers now,
mm-hmm.
so, I mean, it could
mm-hmm.
be another year or two before they get out.
Mm-hmm. But if people check back on your website periodically, they will
yes.
know when they come
yeah.
out. Yeah.
Yeah, and the best thing to do is if people want to come onto the website and just sign in for our newsletters,
mm-hmm.
which are constantly putting out there with information about flow, about engagement, about leadership psychology, about meditation
mm-hmm.
and various aspects of it. And it's a great way to stay connected
right.
with one another.
Uh-huh.
And then, of course, things will be updated all the time
mm-hmm.
about what's coming up.
Great. Well, this has been very interesting, Damien, and I appreciate your taking the time from your family and from your doctoral program and all
yeah.
the other things you're in, and your Vaughn Center, all the things you're involved in, to talk with me about this. So I appreciate it very much.
Well, thank you so much. It was a pleasure speaking with you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you for joining me today on Holistic Health Show. I invite you to my website, www.holistichealthshow.com, where you will find all of the old shows archived. You will find a place to sign up for my free monthly newsletter on healthy holistic aging, and you will find some items for sale. I am Dr. Carl O'Helvey, your host, wishing you a great week.